Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion of the defense and that atrocious 44-10 loss to the Texans on Sunday. And here to do that with me is Kevin Ostreicher of Locked On Ravens. Kevin, how you doing?
I am doing good, Ken. I know the Ravens are in a tough spot right now, but I mean, hey, hopefully they can get this defense right. Maybe that just means getting a little bit healthier. Who knows?
We talked about a lot of problems in the first episode. It's one of those very difficult episodes. Some issues with Zach Orr, if you want to go back and listen to, about the packages and some of the pass rate rush deception used. It was effective in limited times he used it. It didn't go to the well too often on it. But more importantly, a package oddity that I laid out in the first thing. You can take a listen if you really want to get into the weeds on that. We also talked about what happens after week six if the Ravens lose this game to the Rams. Now, we all hope the magic bullet shows up, the Ravens win, they go to 2-4, and some of the odds makers don't look like complete idiots for still having the Ravens as the favorite to win the AFC North still. Actually, some of the gambling markets don't seem completely like they're overloaded with unreasonable people.
Yeah. If they lose to the Rams, their season, like it's not over, because he's still got a long way to go and the schedule does open up. But, you know, at that point, you're going to have a lot of different questions in terms of can they pull it together? And, you know, even when everybody was healthy defensively, they weren't really looking all that good anyway. And, you know, even when the offense was putting up points and, you know, 30 plus, even 40 plus, well, they still got to trap that defense out there. And that's a big concern point right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you what, we're going to do a little different order. We'd normally be going into some individual player discussion here, but I think we're going to take some questions first, which is unusual for this show. But the first is from Dr. Syed. He had two questions. I'll go to his second question first because it's more germane. On a macro and or micro level, what levers are there left to pull to get anything out of this defense? It legitimately looks like they don't know the basic alignments.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just inexperience. I mean, that's kind of what I point to right now. And again, like even when the guys were healthy, it wasn't great. But when you have this many star players out and you're relying on whether it's undrafted rookies or younger players who don't have as much experience. I mean, there were multiple plays where like guys didn't know what they were doing. You can tell they weren't getting lined up properly. They were, you know, blowing coverages, blowing assignments. And the problem is that like this isn't a team that's rebuilding or is, you know, like wanting to get all these young players experience and you live with the punches. Like this is a team that's competing for a Super Bowl. And when you don't have your personnel out there and you're relying on these younger players, you know, it's tough. And even with the inexperience of Zach Orr as a coordinator, you can factor that all in too. And it just becomes very difficult from that perspective.
Yeah. I don't know that I would use the exact term alignments. The instincts of the players there are just not very good right now. And a lot of that is just a complete lack of experience. We saw Lowry getting beat on a couple instinct plays in this game for touchdowns. We've seen, I'd say the inside linebackers have been trying to run around the field and make tackles. I mean, they combined for 25 tackles yesterday. They just weren't a whole lot of defensive wins in there. And part of the problem was they're running around chasing people who've caught the football behind them. So, or caught the football in front of them, either way. And it's been a, you know, a zone catch for a medium yardage play that doesn't end up being a defensive win. And some of it's the fact that they did not handle their coverage responsibilities at the highest level. Instincts are what's really lacking on this team. One of the guys who has fantastic, or two of the guys who have fantastic instincts are Roquan and Hamilton, who are just not out there. Humphrey is another great, very instinctive player. He may be at a point where he's not in exactly the right position, but that wasn't the problem in this game against the Texans. I mean, he wasn't even out there at all. And the guy they have replacing him in a TJ Tampa, or maybe actually more in a one-for-one sense, a Keon Martin, is just a guy with you know, who's further behind on the scale. Love his effort level, by the way. Thought he played well in the preseason. He deserved his playing time. It just hasn't worked out as well as it probably would have with Humphrey.
Right. Yeah. It's just difficult. You know, everything that they run, it's hard to pick up and learn. And I know that for Zach Orr, this defense in particular, when you have the inexperience that they have right now, you're just you're in a heap of trouble. And especially like the schedule they have is not made it easy. I mean, you have to play Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, that Lions offense. Like, I know Texans offense is a little different of a conversation, but even still, the problem is that, like, yeah, Keon Martin for Marlon Humphrey or Teddy Buchanan and Trenton Simpson for Roquan Smith, even though those guys weren't playing particularly well to start, well, you know, those guys have still been there. They understand when to, you know, jump something or when something's coming and those instincts come to play. The guys just don't have that right now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it does make it very tough. Your 40 time is when your 40 time really does not show up as the most important thing, as in games like this, when you see how many yards are lost to instincts, single game to this. Dr. Syed had a second question. We'll lighten it up for a second. How do you can review film this atrocious and maintain your sanity? Kevin, how about you? When you're forced to spend time rewatching a game, you know, planning for all your content that you do, what's your feeling about that?
I mean, for me, I understand going into it what I'm about to watch. I think that's something where I try not to look at it as I'm watching the same game twice. I'm really looking at technical things and, like, whether it be offensive line. I know, Ken, you have your own grading system for the offensive line, which, you know, is very detailed and intricate. Or whether it's just, like, something that I saw on the TV copy that I want to get a better angle of, or, you know, something that I saw, but, you know, there was maybe the wrong angle of the replay. And I think, you know, whether it's all 22 or whatnot, sideline angle, end zone angle, that gives you better perspective. So when it's this bad, sometimes all you can do is laugh, and not in like a funny way, and just like, oh, of course this is happening right now. But, you know, it's more, I tend to try to use it as a learning experience, not as, man, I have to watch this game again.
Yeah, if you do, I think if you look at it that way, you probably create a mountain for yourself. And both Kevin and I have probably two of the biggest self-imposed workloads among all content creators locally. I do 9 pods a week and 2 articles. Yeah. Kevin, that you do a pod every day during the week. Yeah. And there's other people. I'm not saying that nobody else writes as much or does it. There's lots of other people, but it can become a large mountain to worry about. I think the thing I take most solace in are two things. Number one is that Maureen does it with me, and she wants to do it and do it well. If you saw Maureen ever score a game of offensive line and the level of quality control that's going into that, because basically her job is to make sure every piece of information is collected correctly. And she'll also probe at me about how I've scored things on an individual play. Wait a minute, isn't that a level 2 block? Wait a minute, did he pull on that? She'll ask questions like that that'll help me look at it again in terms of the scoring. But the main thing she does, she's an incredible drive to make sure that sheet is filled out correctly. So that I have that. She does a wonderful job with me on the notes. It's something we really enjoy doing together. And so, you know, she's had a recent retirement, and I'm you know, could not be more happy that she's around, and we're finishing the job earlier during the week because of it. So that's probably the biggest thing. The second part is that watching the film to me is a little bit cathartic in terms of I don't laugh, but it's a second chance to look at it technically, kind of like what you're saying, and maybe find that thing you didn't see before. Because during the 3 hours of the game, I'm watching that game like a fan, particularly at the stadium. Now, you'll see some of my tweets, and you'll see, oh, this is the first snap they went into dime defense. You know, I'm also looking at it as an analyst as well, but that's largely because Maureen is next to me scoring that on the sheet directly, so I have it available to me. But anyway, I think there is a certain catharsis in watching film, even from a loss, that you helps you get over it a little quicker, rather than people who You know, don't want to rewatch the game and press that anger all down into their butt, pit of their stomach until daddy throws the bottle at the referee, so to speak, in Homer Simpson terms.
Yeah, I just think, to me, watching the game, and especially after, like, just using this Houston game for an example, like watching the game for the first time, you kind of go through all those emotions. Then you're at, like, the second time around, it's more so just like, what can I learn from this? And so, like, I think one of the coolest things for me is sometimes picking up things you didn't see in the first place.
Yep.
Like, you know, it's so like, you know, there are always plays during the game where I look back on it and like, I'm noting that play. I want to go back and see what I saw there. But, you know, there'll be many different plays throughout the course of a full film session of a game where I'm just like, man, I didn't even notice that during the game, but that impacted the entire play, whether it was a missed block or, you know, someone blowing up a screen pass and taking on a blocker to free someone else up. Like, there are so many examples of that. So that's kind of what I try to use.
All right. Got another question here from Minion Hunter. And he says, Ken, if the Ravens defense hasn't looked good since McDonald left, have the Ravens exhausted the promotion opportunities within the organization and do they need to look to the outside for the next Ravens defensive coordinator? Okay. So I guess I look at that as having two questions. In season coordinator, we kind of hit on the first show that we both think It might be Pagano as an interim player. Who do you think? Do you think there's anybody within the organization they would even consider for a promotion to a DC role internally?
Full-time? I don't think so. Not off the top of my head. I mean, yeah, Dennis Johnson, D-line, Chuck Smith. Maybe some people would want a Chuck Smith.
He's not the right personality.
I don't think so either. I can just imagine some people wanting him. I guess Pagano would be the only one, but I think that opportunity, not even like, I know everybody talks about McDonald and rightfully so for head coach, but defensive coordinator wise, I mean, that was Weaver, Wilson, like, you know, all those guys that could have stepped into that role. They obviously chose Orr. He was another one that was rumored to be. And the reason that I think they made that decision so quickly after going through the whole Monken long drawn out process was because coaches were getting picked off one by one in succession and they needed to keep somebody. So Orr was that guy. But I think if they were to go through a search after the season, I'd probably look externally.
Yeah, I think that's what will happen too. And, you know, this should be one of the most attractive positions in all sports. Yep. I was actually pretty pissed off that they went with Wink Martindale as quickly as they did. And it's not that Wink was a bad DC. I thought he's an excellent DC in his time with the Ravens. I loved his hyper-aggressive style. I love the fact that he used to go to the race car package and you have really extreme package responses to the opposing offense. And he could afford to do so with the 2019 Ravens. But I really love that about him. And the thing I was surprised by, though, is the Ravens made that choice so quickly internally when they had the most attractive job in all of sports at the coordinator level to you know, bring somebody in. And, you know, they would know that the draft was going to be something that was going to be used heavily on the defense, and they would always have a good stream of players that would come in after them, a winning organization that would make them look good largely. I just thought that would one of the most attractive jobs. I thought they could afford to take their time and select from the real cream of the crop. And they made an internal hire almost immediately. It worked out. I don't think the Martindale hire was a bad hire at all. And the McDonald hire was kind of a planned move.
Yeah,
that I don't think worked bad either, obviously. I worked out very well for McDonald, certainly, and Harbaugh had a hand in the internship and whatnot that we talked about. The Orr one, it could have been on the same level, and maybe it will still work out for Zach Orr, or maybe it will take more time than the Ravens have, as you kind of intimated in the first show. I think it's, you know, we're probably on 4th and 8 of the Zach Orr defensive coordinator career right now. He needs to show some sort of major improvement against the Rams to be sure that he's back for the Bears game after the bye.
It'd have to be a big leap. And you mentioned McDonald and kind of that plan to move. Not that I think that they have this all lined up or anything, but maybe if Harbaugh and that whole situation, he ends up not being the coach next year, Jesse Minter over in Los Angeles, who obviously spent time in Baltimore for a while and
DC.
Michigan, maybe he could be the guy that steps into that Mike McDonald head coach role for the Ravens and, you know, That's a possibility, but I think that it'll be up to the Ravens to go through that long, drawn-out process again. Again, I agree with you going through, and whether it is for DC or for head coach or for whatever position it is, you know, I just think the Orr hire was too quick. Martindale as well, like, you know, going through and just saying, boom, all right, there's our guy. By the way, if you want to be defensive coordinator of the Ravens, just be their inside linebacker coach, because that seems to be the theme.
Yeah, coaches, by the way, often will coach a lot of positions, and it's not always on the same side of the ball. Mike Nolan was a wide receivers coach before he became a defensive coordinator and then a head coach. You know, you can do it from a lot of different positions to get that done. But yeah, anyway, I won't belabor that any further with further back and forth on this. So I don't have a single head coach option, by the way, who would be the guy, or a DC option. I'll just say the Ravens, particularly the head coach level, they're looking for a different set of talents. And I think I mentioned this in the first show, it will show up in Bisciotti's hiring, and it's his hire to make ultimately, although there'll be a lot of people in the organization involved. I think he wants a CEO coach again of the Harbaugh variety. And I know that's going to disappoint a lot of people who want either an offensive minded coach who can handle also a defensive minded coach who can handle one side of the ball in addition to head coaching responsibilities. I don't think that's what Bisciotti wants. Bisciotti, being a CEO himself, probably also wants a CEO of football operations that that will handle the coaching, right? A CEO of on-field football operations, put it that way.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me. And again, from the one side of the ball, I've seen Minter, Flores, a bunch of those defensive-minded guys, or, Brett Young, offensive coordinator, to come in and take the reins. But yeah, that probably seems like the most likely scenario for the Ravens. And it worked early. I mean, obviously the playoff success hasn't been there over the last handful of seasons, but, it took John Harbaugh a while to kind of figure out how to be that CEO. I mean, 2012, you hear the players and everything. He had to kind of work his way into being a player's coach and how to work with his guys. It's not, he came in there and was like, we're doing it my way. That's what everybody has said. And the players are like, oh, wait, what are you talking about? That's not how we roll. I mean, he came into a situation where there were a lot of highly opinionated players, Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, Terrell Suggs, everybody. And so whatever coach it would be, if Harbaugh does leave this offseason, I mean, it's not quite that in that locker room. It feels like the locker room needs a little bit of mending at this point, and maybe finding leaders and whatnot. We know Lamar leads by example and Roquan's kind of the rah-rah guy, but they don't really have, a full-on Ray Lewis, it feels like, at this point. So,
who does? Because Ray Lewis is one of a kind. I Kyle Hamilton could be that guy. Marlon Humphrey could be that guy. I think Marlon Humphrey needs to have the commitment to the field to be the kind of leader you really want him to be. So I want him to be committed to the play on the field. He has a lot of other things he does. He's always considered one of the oddball characters. They talked about Jair Alexander is one of one, but Humphrey's also one of one, so I guess they're two of two kind of thing. that's not necessarily a really good thing. You want the other players to respect you for the right things. The other thing is, your best leadership comes from the very best players, so that's no problem with Hamilton. It could start to be a problem with Humphrey if he's not playing at the level he has. Maybe he's unwilling to make a position change. He might not be around for the Ravens. He's one of the guys who might be cut next year. So, I mean, the Ravens have some things to think about with Marlon Humphrey. So I think Hamilton would be the most likely guy. Roquan also, because of the balloon that's in his contract starting next year, maybe a guy who's not around. They may have to cut him, even though it means a lot of dead money. They do have some cap savings from it. So there's some tough decisions certainly are coming up for the Ravens.
Yeah, can't keep everybody. I think that if I remember off the top of my head, because I looked this up, I think, Marlon and Roquan, they'd save around $7 to $8 million for each player.
Yeah, that's
this
correct.
Upcoming offseason. I know if they move on from Roquan next year,
$25 million of dead money.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. Yep. So it's going to be tough because, again, especially inside linebacker wise, who do you have to replace Roquan?
You have to be able to get somebody for $7 million. So it has to be a draft pick, basically. Yeah. But the only money you have to spend is the cap savings. The other money you've already spent. Roquan already has it. It's just a matter of how they account for it.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
It's not that bad. Let's move on and talk, because we do want to get this episode over with, frankly, a little bit earlier than normal. Let's talk about some of the individual players on the field. Now, most of our talk has been either about scheme and packages in the first half, the lack of the pass rush to get home, but we haven't really talked about the individual players. Who do you want to talk about?
I will start... You know, I'll start with TJ Tampa, who we kind of mentioned was a little bit off in those zones. And again, it's trial by fire for him, where this will be the same conversation for a lot of these players. It's like you're putting them in against a decent offense, not the level of the Bills or the Lions. But, you know, I think that, again, it's the potential these players have. And I think we see that from TJ. But, you know, there were a lot of completions, not like a ton, but like someone that I feel like, you know, still needs time. And that's a lot of this defense right now, but I don't know. It feels like they're going to have to figure this out quickly. TJ and a lot of these younger defensive backs in particular, because I think even with guys like Marlon and Nate and Jair and Chidobe Awuzie, TJ Tampa is going to be like that bridge between the star guys and the depth pieces, even though he's more of a depth piece himself. So I don't know, TJ Tampa, you saw him and he was like, really off, like a lot of the guys were, but it was like 5 yards of separation sometimes between him and the receiver, which again just wasn't helping anybody.
Yeah, I think in terms of instincts, he'd be one of the players I would point to, and he had played pretty well in the little bit he played in a dime defense and whatnot. He's a player who really wants to have someone behind him to pass his responsibility off to, in order to be as aggressive as he needs to be. So the outside corner is not the ideal spot, because it means he's on his own when there's a single high post, you know. So you're single high safety is means he's responsible outside the numbers pretty much for anything that may happen. Just does not have the outstanding speed for that. Being afraid to get deep is one thing that often shows up, is you play too soft. I think we saw a little bit of that from Tampa in this game. He may have to make a position change. His instincts are not necessarily terrible. He was on top of the receiver. I forget if it was Hutchinson or who it was that made the touchdown catch against him. He was right there in Brandon Stevens-esque fashion, but that time he couldn't get his head around for the ball. Normally, that's not the Tampa problem specifically. Normally, he has a pretty good idea where the ball is, but it's because he's soft that can happen.
Right. It's just instincts for sure. So we'll have to see.
All right, I'll move on. I'll talk about another guy who had a tough game in a lot of ways, but I still think there's something there, and that's Keon Martin. He had 3 really bad penalties in this game, and one of them is experience, and it's knowing how the officials call it, but he ran out of bounds on the punt, and it caused a 25-yard change in field position when the ball had to be re-kicked. Jordan Stout was very upset about it. He just rooted out a 61-yard punt with good coverage on the other end. There might have even been a holding call on – no, that wasn't a holding call. The only call was the out-of-bounds call that forced the re-kick, and then they had a 25-yard change, which moved them into Ravens territory for the start of that drive, and, you know, Stout had just saved them. But then he had 2 other penalties. And the first, I think he got back on side on the sack. It looked to me like he bobbed over, then bobbed back. I didn't think the snap occurred while his head was in the neutral zone. If it was, I mean, it's not in the neutral zone like it often is another player. And here's the other thing. The stadium, this was really apparent. That call came in way late. Normally, that official has his hands on the flag. If somebody's offside, he throws it right at that. He probably waited 4 seconds to throw that flag. Completely unacceptable. Unacceptable. I didn't think he was offsides, and he made a beautiful play to track down Stroud for a 16-yard sack, and that got wiped off the board. A little later in that drive, he had one of the most contactless DPI flags I've seen. I have not yet looked at the 22 for that specific play to see if he had jersey or what it might have been, but I can't see anything on the broadcast video in terms of what he might have done.
Yeah, that special teams penalty was a killer. I mean, that's the one I keep coming back to. And look, Jordan Stout has every right to be upset about that. And, you know, it's tough because those are the types of things. And Stout flipped the field beautifully for them. And then what, the Texans got the ball at like their own 41 or the Ravens 41, something along those lines. So it's just short field. And again, that defense is coming out there. And, you know, I don't remember exactly what happened on that drive, but I can tell you those points because practically every single Texans possession was points. So those are the types of things. And again, when you're talking about momentum and kind of trying to get that back on your side in any way you can, those are the penalties. And the Ravens honestly have been better than they were last year, which again is a pretty low bar, but better than they were last year in terms of penalties. They had 9 in this game. Wasn't for a lot of yards, but it's those little things. And that you mentioned Martin having the 3. I just think that, man, that special teams one was brutal.
Yeah, tough game to be certain. Who's your next guy you want to talk about?
Trenton Simpson is interesting to me because, you know, I mentioned that play where he kind of helped off of Schultz and then Stroud kind of looped it over his head for a big completion. That's just responsibilities for the whole defense. But, you know, he did have the sack on C.J. Stroud and, you know, as kind of assist to Atavius Robinson on that play. But he's someone I just can't figure out. He's someone I just cannot figure out for the life of me because feels like the Ravens in certain spots, you know, like we're going to play Jay Cummel over him. And then, you know, they're trying to give him opportunities. He had 10 tackles in this game, but of course, you know, I don't go off of tackles in terms of how well or not a guy played. He's just maybe around the ball a bunch, but Trenton Simpson is one that I think really needs to get it together here for the Ravens consistently, because for as long as Roquan is out, you just don't want to be relying on Teddy Buchanan. Again, it's unfair to do of a rookie. He has the green dot and everything, and he's the one with that responsibility right now. But, you know, Trenton needs to kind of step up here. He's not a rookie anymore, not a second-year guy anymore. I think consistently you got to kind of get more production from him.
I was very happy with what Simpson did as a tackler in this game. I mean, he was flying around the field, making plays. He was one of the high effort guys on the field. And boy, the Ravens really need to see that uniformly from the defense. They need to see a bunch of guys who are putting their body at risk, flying around, trying to make plays. And Simpson, in a lot of ways, is at a real crossroads in his NFL career. It's not hard to see that he would play out next season with the Ravens with very little playing time, if they draft an inside linebacker, say, and they want and they go with Buchanan at the will again, and even if they let Roquan go, maybe Jay Higgins even pops over ahead of him in the order because he can play the mic, and we don't think Simpson can. But if it's not easy to see Simpson going into a second contract with not very much to offer to another team, getting his last shot in year 5, that not working out, and all of a sudden he's not in the NFL anymore. You know, it's not a matter of just not getting a second contract. He doesn't have the chance to be a survivor player who plays on a number of years on special teams or might do a number of things. I mean, his career is very much at a crossroads with the playing time he's getting this year going to be a big factor. One of the problems for Simpson was coverage responsibilities in this game, where he and Buchanan both had difficulty between level 2 and level 3 in terms of what's going on. Didn't have the best support back there from Lowry in this game in particular, also from Starks in terms of what was going on. Starks had a tough game and he was playing very deep on a lot of the plays. So those inside linebackers have a responsibility for a deeper drop that they've got to take care of. But it's a tough situation for Simpson. I love the effort level. That's the good news. Yep. There needs to be more in terms of instincts at this point in his career.
Consistency for sure. I mean, you know, he's that ball of energy you need. He's always playing hard, but, you know, he needs to put it together. It's not the exact same scenario, but, you know, Tim Williams, who I talked about on the first show, is someone that the Ravens decided wasn't doing well enough. He was a higher draft pick, 3rd round out of Alabama, and they cut him week 4. because he wasn't doing, or after week four, because he wasn't doing enough for them. And so for Simpson, again, who could they replace him with? That's the big question. But he needs to get it together, because I agree with you. He might be in trouble if he doesn't get it together.
Yeah, it's he should be really having a come to Jesus moment with the people he trusts in football. Maybe Tyler Santucci is the guy to have it with. Maybe it's somebody else who needs to be detached from the Ravens organization to really get an honest assessment of where he is, and hopefully do the things he needs to do to improve his game. In particular, in his case, I think there'd be no substitution for off-season position-specific training. Try and go to some inside linebacker camp for 2-4 weeks where he gets a lot of things to work on, even if he's drinking out of a fire hose for it, in a short period of time. There are individual gurus who can work with him during the offseason. It can't be Ravens coach because they have rules about that, but it can be an individual guru he hires himself. But I think if it'd be the worst thing, not the worst thing possible, but it would be an unproductive offseason spent if all he did was work out. And I have complete faith that he's going to show up, you know, looking the chiseled body that he had this year. I just wanted to see him show up with more position-specific knowledge.
Right. That's the big thing. And especially for like what the future for Roquan holds too. I mean, can't rely on Trenton right now to be that guy, but you know, could he come into training camp and make a name for himself next year? It's possible. You can do it.
Yeah. All right. I guess I'll talk about Aeneas Peebles here as being a guy that is not getting on the field very much right now. They seem to have their very, very specific role for him is as a third down pass rusher, and that's the only thing. I talked in the season, he could be a closeout player that you would have on the field a lot in race car packages or packages where every down is a passing down for a team that's trying to come back against you. Ravens, unfortunately, have not been in that situation very much this year, not since really the Buffalo game, the Cleveland game a little bit, but the Buffalo game was the primary one. And so Peebles hasn't had a lot of total snaps. And he's had a very extreme differentiation between pass and run snaps for this year, for the entire season. I have that right here for a moment. So Peebles has played 20 rush attempts, and some of those are scrambles, and 44 pass attempts. It's very extreme. Whereas a player like Okoye has played 25 runs and 27 passes, for example, or Jenkins has played 80 runs and 68 passes. So, He's one of the most extreme on the Ravens in terms of having that. And those are my own stats. They exclude the penalties, kneels, and spikes. They're a little bit lower in each case than what you'd see on a PFF.
Right. And I mean, again, I think a lot of high hopes for him coming in is that like spark off the bench pass rusher. But, you know, and this is also a Ravens team that just does not like to play rookies when they don't have to, unless they have a clear designed role. Like, you know, unless your name was Patrick Queen, or obviously Malachi had that role, or, you know, like, Linderbaum, like there's a specific, and it's a lot of first rounders too, where that's the case. It's very rare that like second round and below, day two, day three guys get those opportunities. They have to play like half their defense is like rookies, undrafted guys right now. So it's very far out of the Ravens' comfort zone. So it does not shock me at all they're going with this rotation. You know, the vets, I remember with DJ Fluker and Orlando Brown in 2018, I think that was. And, you know, Tyree Phillips and that whole conversation with him, and maybe that was Fluker. It's Tyree Phillips, DJ Fluker that year. But, you know, rookies just don't play a lot for the Ravens unless you have a clear-cut role.
Yeah, the right tackle was James Hurst playing Orlando Brown for half a season. Yep. So that was some fairly strange stuff going on. Another player, your turn again, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Buchanan a little bit too. I mean, he led the team in tackles, green dot responsibility, 15 of those. And again, it's just learning from him. I mean, a lot of these guys are just put in positions, and well, not even put in positions, just like they're in positions where they haven't been before. And you know, for Buchanan, it's his fifth NFL game, first with a green dot, and you're being asked to essentially not save the defense, but be the guy that gets everybody in the right spot. And so obviously his role goes beyond the box score in terms of what he had to do. But again, it's just like a guy that I think impressed a lot of people over the course of his college tenure and, you know, coverage ability and the whole nine yards. And he kind of still, I mean, he's out there flying around, but there's still some stuff he has to work on.
Same issue as with Simpson in terms of coverage and covering that area between level two and level three. It's just not what he does. And he came with a little bit better pedigree of that, but it was at Cal. I think Cal was in the ACC last year. I get corrected about that every once in a while.
Yeah, I can't keep track anymore.
Yeah, you can't keep track of where the Pac-12 is scattered like the cats to go to their various other conferences to find a home. Last guy I really want to speak about in any period of time is Okoye. I'm glad they've gotten him a little bit of live fire here. And they had some plays where Okoye and Jenkins were on together. So they were trying some very heavy double nose tackle sets to try and do some things against the run. I would point to that. And I had some criticisms of Orr in the first episode, particularly in terms of some of the things he did in the pass rush and not using a lot of deceptive scheme when it was successful and using some funny situations in terms of not having enough heavies on the field versus six offensive linemen. But this is one thing where I'd point to that I think he's been a little bit he's tried some things. They haven't always worked, but he's tried to put additional nose tackles on the field. He had Jones playing as a three tech in this game alongside of Jenkins. I thought that was a good move. And Okoye playing as a three tech. It's just trying to give your team a chance to do something that's a little bit more than what they otherwise are capable of. Okoye is a guy who can give you some decent snaps. It does not look to me right now like Okoye is really ready to be any sort of a big time playmaker. Yeah. It looks like he's more of a I don't want to call him a situational run defender, more like a heavy that is not at the Michael Pierce level of making plays, but he can hopefully hold his ground. It's one thing he's not very good at, by the way, at this point in his career, setting his feet properly to take a double team. And that's something he needs to get better at. But this is valuable live fire for a player like Okoye, who's basically never played live fire snaps before other than in preseason.
Right. Yeah, it's all good to get these guys action. I mean, you're not going to get this on a fully healthy Ravens team. The problem is that you're doing it in a season where you're trying to win a Super Bowl, and this isn't like a rebuilding squad. So I like Okoye a lot. I think he's one of those guys we've talked about where I think he can be a solid player for them next season. And this experience will certainly help, even just if it's to get him on tape and he can go through that tape and learn and watch himself and figure out, hey, this is what I'm trying to do and learn from that heading into year two. But of course we have a long way to go until then, but seems like the Ravens have a lot of high hopes for him too. It seems like they really like him, and you know, the skill set is there. It's just about kind of coming into his own as an NFL player.
Right. I think I would say the frame is there, the the size, the length, all those things.
Yeah,
that's
the
wonderful.
Potential, right? Yeah,
yeah. All right, Kevin. Always a pleasure talking football. If you caught it off early tonight, we've done the individual player discussion. Guess what? We're not having MVPs this week, as if you couldn't have probably guessed that to happen. But Kevin, tell folks about Locked On Ravens and where they can find your material.
Yeah, Locked On Ravens. We're 5 days a week over there. So Monday through Friday, we got you covered with daily Ravens episodes. And you can find us over on YouTube, or if you want to watch the show. And then if you want to listen, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. And we also have a lot of other content this season as well. So it's a lot of fun doing that. I know the team itself has not been especially fun to watch, but it's still fun putting out all the content, talking about the ifs, ands, and buts of this Ravens team. So Locked On Ravens is one of the many places across the Baltimore Ravens content community you can get a lot of Ravens coverage.
Yeah, this community is going to be a little bit tested, I think, the rest of this year in terms of their willingness to put out content. But I don't have a question that several of the big ones are still going to be producing stuff every day. There's a lot of tendency in a year like this, listens tend to decline, and you may have a lot of people who just stop producing as much content as they normally would. But I have no doubt that Kevin will not do that. And you have my word that we're not going to do that either. So thanks, Kevin, for coming on. Other folks out there, thanks for your incredible loyalty to this show. Please continue to use hashtag Film Study Mailbag for your questions. Get good ones every week. I'm going to ask you special. I'm on the radio on Tuesday mornings between 8 and 8:30. If you want to call in with your number one question, and this is hopefully you're going to ask a very technical question that you'll give me a chance to give you a good answer on. That'd be great. I'd love to hear from you on that. If you call into the radio station for that, there right now, there is obviously a tremendous number of fire Harbaugh, fire or burn the building down kind of calls they're getting. And it would be just nice to get occasionally get one that's very insightful from a, from a film study fan. Kevin, thanks again for coming on.
You got it, Ken. Always appreciate you having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.